Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and special guest, Pete Toll of the NBA Front Office Show. What's up, guys? How are we doing?
Oh, doing great. Thanks for having me again.
Trust the process.
Yes, trust the process. We are talking Sixers today. You know, like we said before, you can check out the show on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. Now, before we look at the Sixers for next year, we're going to look back at last year. Obviously, a really successful and somewhat surprising season, 52-30, knocked out in the second round by the Celtics. Obviously, Simmons was Rookie of the Year. Joel Embiid was a dominant center. What were your thoughts on Philly last year?
Well, if you're a Sixers fan like myself, you were ecstatic with the way that the season went. Definitely exceeded my expectations, because I think I was kind of on the same page as a lot of, you know, kind of the casual fan, so to speak, because I was a little bit, you know, kind of on the conservative side. I had them, you know, in the 5-7 range, somewhere in there, you know, just because I felt like it was another year before Ben Simmons was going to be able to make a jump. And obviously I was wrong, which I'm, you know, happy about. I feel like even though they had the fantastic season, you know, the 17-game win streak, things like that, there was a couple of things that stood out to me with the two stars in Simmons and Embiid. With Embiid, his conditioning really needs to improve, and I think that's something that he's worked on this offseason. But you could tell in a lot of games, especially late, you know, last 5-6 minutes in the fourth quarter, he would try to take on everything that, you know, defense could bring kind of by himself. And, you know, he'd get tired and make lazy moves on offense, or, you know, kind of give up a little early on defense. And hopefully that's something that he's really pushing to fix. And then Ben Simmons, obviously without the 3-point shot or any kind of mid-range shot, was limited to, you know, shots right at the rim, dunks, layups, things like that. Very successful with it. But as teams kind of honed in on his deficiency of shooting, he ended up, you know, kind of faltering with his decision-making in the fourth quarter as well, a few games, and really had some costly turnovers early in the season. Kind of fixed that going late into the season, but it was still a problem of, you know, not having that shot really something to kind of, you know, show a different look on the scouting report to other teams. But overall, you know, very happy, you know, with where things went in kind of year one of the new process.
Yeah, last year, I can't remember where we stood, Nick, on the
Sixers. We stood playoffs, but I think it was more so an 8-5 instead of, you know, 4-1.
Right, yeah, we had them just slightly below that. Obviously, I think the big dependent for me was whether or not what is his name? Joel Embiid. Oh my God, I'm saying Jaleel. Joel Embiid's health, and obviously he was healthy besides the eye injury he got late in the season, but he was fantastic. Ben Simmons, I didn't know what to expect. I know I didn't have Ben Simmons as my Rookie of the Year. Obviously he was still tremendous. Yes, you did. he was tremendous. I mean, he does everything. He really is a mini LeBron. Obviously the jump shot needs to get better, and he had the couple bad games in the playoffs, but kind of got like overblown. I mean, this was still a rookie who is trying to, you know, figure out how to win in the playoffs and everything else. And it wasn't like they had the easiest of matchups in that playoff run of theirs. But I was okay with him. Robert Covington, I think, kind of solidified himself as the perfect time of 3-and-D wing for the Sixers team. J.J. Redick was, of course, very good as well. The Markelle Fultz saga was as
was
confusing,
to say the least.
Yeah, you know, between the shoulder injury and then the shot change, and then just the entire saga with that, and then of course we had the Twitter issues with burner accounts. So the Sixers were full of drama on and off the court, and they've pretty much solidified and sold me on the fact that they're going to be a team that's to be feared in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, it was a really exciting season for Sixers fan. And like you said, Corey, moving forward, now they have Simmons and Embiid. Now, what were your guys' thoughts on the playoff series against Boston? You know, I think going to the series, a lot of people had picked the Sixers to win. And then it just felt like, you know, maybe Brad Stevens outcoached Brett Brown. Like you guys mentioned, Ben Simmons struggled against that defense a little bit. What do you think was the biggest issue for the Sixers against the Celtics in the playoffs?
Just the different looks that Brad Stevens was able to throw at the Sixers. It kind of, you know, really confused Ben Simmons. You know, from an offensive standpoint. And I think as he gets more experience, that'll be different this year. I'm actually looking forward to opening night just to see what kind of transpires there. But, you know, with Embiid, it was the same thing, like I mentioned before, late in games, to where he just felt like everything had to be on his shoulders. You know, J.J. Redick, you know, was consistent, but they didn't really have much else outside of that. Like, you know, you had Ersan, you know, would show up one game, wouldn't another game. Then you had Bellinelli would hit clutch shots. But where else, you know, were you getting any kind of defensive stops? And that's where, you know, I think the Sixers really got outcoached, was on the defensive end. And we all know Brad Stevens is, to me, he's the top coach in, you know, in the NBA, as far as X's and O's, you know, game management, changing schemes. But, you know, Brett Brown's no slouch himself. But, you know, when you're going against Brad Stevens, you pretty much have to have your A game every night. And unfortunately, the Sixers just got outworked and outcoached.
Definitely got outcoached. I remember some of the out of timeout plays that were called. I think it was, what was it, game three or game four in Philly where they, the Sixers kind of blew the game. I know that Ben Simmons.
I think it was game three.
He had like that really poor bounce pass to inbound. Yeah, and it's like, what are you thinking? And obviously,
there was like a few turnovers at the end of that game that were pretty bad.
Yeah, they were very sloppy, and yeah, the coaching differential in that series was huge.
And they were a young team, so I think they'll take it almost as a positive experience, you know, learning from those issues they had. Now, what was the highlight of last season for the Sixers, guys?
For me, it was the 17-game win streak going into the playoffs. You know, and obviously the Miami Heat ended that. But I think that, you know, looking down the stretch, everybody was firing on all cylinders. Fultz came back and actually looked decent, you know, in his first game. I believe he had, I think it was like 8 or 10 points in that first game. And he had a triple-double in there as well. Going into the playoffs, I was like, okay, Fultz can contribute and, you know, do something. And, of course, he didn't. But that win streak, just everybody came together at the right time and really pushed the Sixers up in the standings. And as a Sixers fan, to me, it was enjoyable to watch.
The highlight for me would probably be Joel Embiid. I mean, the game that sticks out is that one against the Lakers where he had, what, like 48 points and like 18 rebounds and just a ridiculous stat line. But, you know, this was the first season where I kind of just felt that this is probably going to be the best center in the league within the next 5 years, between his defensive ability and the fact that offensively he can beat you almost off the dribble. He can beat you down low. He can spot up from three. Obviously, he's not like a great three-point shooter, but he can hit them when he's in a groove. So for me, it was just the fact that Joel Embiid, when he is healthy, I think he's a electric center and soon to be top five.
Yeah, I think he's probably top five already and going to be pushing for, you know, for like that top two, top three spot this year. You know, like you guys said, Embiid was huge. That winning streak was awesome. And it would happen with Embiid being out and Ben Simmons got to kind of really show everybody he was the guy. And that's going to be my highlight. I was really impressed with Ben Simmons. I did pick him to win Rookie of the Year, but he kind of killed my expectations just with his impact he had and just that athleticism, the ability. And then like adding the jump shot. No, I don't think it's going to be impossible. I don't think he'll ever be a knockdown shooter, but I think he'll be able to get a consistent shot down, and you know, we'll see him moving forward as one of the probably the best players in the NBA. But now on the negative note, biggest disappointment of last year?
For me, Markelle Fultz. I never thought I'd see something like that to where, you know, a player was so dominant in college and just really excelled, especially shooting the ball, you know, shot 41% from three in his lone year at Washington. Averaged almost 6 assists, close to 6 rebounds to go with 23 points. And then to just, you know, have this whole fiasco with, you know, his mom dating his trainer and then the trainer saying, okay, you need to shoot from a chair and shoot laying flat on the court and get some shots up. We got to build your strength and trying to change that jump shot up. And then all of a sudden he messes his shoulder up, and then I think with the shoulder injury coupled with, hey, I'm not doing well, I'm the first pick and I'm just bombing it out here, and fans saying what is going on, we could have had Jason Tatum, and you know, all of that got inside of his head. So I think it was a mixture of, as Drew Hanlon said, the yips, and as Markelle Fultz has said, it was the injury. I think it's a mix of both. You know, out for most of the season, only played in 14 games. didn't really, you know, shoot the, well, he only shot one attempt from three, didn't really look to take many jump shots either, you know, from mid range, basically got to that restricted area and threw up little floaters and things like that, or cut to the basket. And that's how he scored. But he also showed, you know, promise as well, even though he was really limited with the shooting. So I'm hoping that things turn around this year, but that was definitely the low point, you know, across the board.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Pete. The disappointment is definitely Markelle Fultz. I was really high on him coming out of college. Like, I thought this guy was going to be a star no matter what. He still can be a star, don't get me wrong. Obviously, the injury and all of that plays a factor in the initial evaluation.
Did you pick him for Rookie of the Year last year?
What?
Did you pick him for Rookie of the Year last year?
I did, yes. He was my pick. Unfortunately, 14 games doesn't really help the case. Unlike Joel Embiid, who played 34 a couple of years ago and was still like number two in Rookie of the Year voting. But yeah, you know, the shoulder injury and everything came with that. I agree with you too, Pete. I think there's definitely a mental aspect to it when you're seeing a guy, you know, like Jason Tatum balling out, doing the things that everyone expected you to do. It has to have some kind of effect. And this Sixers team was obviously really good last year, winning 52 games. He did get a triple double in the final game of the season, or was it one of the last games of the season? I know he was the youngest player ever to get a triple double.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So obviously there is something there still. Like when he finally got back and was healthy, I know he didn't shoot the ball great that final, I don't know, I think it was like a 10-game stretch. But he definitely ended the season on a high note. And, you know, some of the jump shots I've seen in preseason, so he looks healthy now, but last season it was definitely just the fact that he just couldn't get on the floor.
Yeah, no, definitely disappointing, especially a very talented guy. It just feels like Sixers rookies just have some really bad luck. They're like cursed. But, you know, just everything not really working out for him. And like Pete said, the combination of the injury and then like the mental aspect really hindered him. But I think going to this year, he'll be in okay shape. Now, talking about this year's ranking, the Sixers are coming at number five. Do you think this is fair, too high, too low? What are your thoughts?
For me, I think it's fair because I feel like obviously – you know, in my personal opinion, Boston's going to be number one. I think they just have too much depth on the team for the Sixers to overtake them. And then that's where things kind of get murky as far as the East, because Toronto obviously is improved. And then I really am high on Indiana as well. So the Sixers kind of have, you know, a little conundrum, because you really, if you're the Sixers, you want to finish. If you don't get the first seed, you want to get the second seed, because you really don't want to fall to third and have to play, you know, Boston earlier than the conference finals. So it'll be interesting to kind of see where they fall. But, you know, I think it's fair.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think it's fair. If they had gotten one of these marquee wings in either Paul George or Kawhi, I probably would have them probably second. I might even have them higher than Boston just because of the initial star power. But I think five is right where they belong. They just didn't make any crazy moves, I think, that would push them up. And like you said, you know, the Pacers are right there with them. And, I mean, I honestly think depending on how the Wizards' chemistry works, that could be a team that actually does very well in the East.
Yeah, you got the Bucks as well, who could make a jump this year, obviously.
And, yeah, of course, I'm really high on the Bucks. That's a bad miss.
Yeah, Antetokounmpo obviously is really impressive. We've already seen him throw down some monster dunks, and it's only preseason. But back to the Sixers, you know, I think number five is good. And you're going to see internal development from Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid. I think we'll see Markelle Fultz. And then even picking up some of the guys they got. I know with some minor guys, but I think they can kind of fill in some of the needs they have. So I think five going into the season is definitely fair. Now, getting on to the additions, draft-wise, they were very busy, you know, starting off with number 16 overall, which was included in a trade with Mikal Bridges going to the Suns, and also a 2021 first round pick via Miami going back to Philly. Now, what were your thoughts on getting Smith at 16?
Well, with Smith, I like the athleticism. Obviously, he can kind of play all over the floor. He played everywhere, like small forward, shooting guard, power forward at Texas Tech, and I think that's going to help him for the NBA, being, you know, kind of that guy that can get out and transition and dunk the ball, you know, get in the passing lanes and get steals. That's going to be really good, you know, for him. Unfortunately, he has a foot injury, same Jones fracture that Joel Embiid had. And so I don't know how that's going to impact his season, you know, overall, as far as if he even plays at all. Being that first round pick, they're probably going to take it very, very slow with him. And then you got to think with Zaire Smith, you know, being undersized, he's only about 6'4", 6'5". He's going to have to play that shooting guard small forward role. Even though he is athletic, he's undersized really to be, you know, someone that's just athletic. He's going to have to be able to shoot the ball. That's something that he didn't really do a lot at Texas Tech. He didn't shoot it enough, and he didn't really take a lot of threes. He's able to move well on offense, but is he going to be able to move well enough to get open shots and then knock those shots down? Because that's what the Sixers are going to need long-term out of his development.
Yeah, I mean, I have some of the same concerns because of his height. Obviously, I don't watch a ton of college basketball. I was actually hoping they were going to keep Bridges.
Me too.
I thought
that he was such a sad situation that he was like so hyped and then they traded him.
I thought he was a better fit too for what they wanted and the fact that they wanted to win now. I thought he would have been a better fit. So regardless, this is who they have. And obviously, I didn't realize that he had that the surgery for the allergic reaction he had to food. Like I didn't realize he had all that. So it depends on when he gets back on the floor. But again, like I got to see how he looks out there. And I'm not sold on that. I think they messed up by trading Bridges personally for this pick.
You got to do remember it does come with a first round pick, which they could use in a big package later on. But the word is too, is that they had him really high in the draft board. I don't know if that's true. Pete, have you heard that as well?
I heard that. And then it was interesting because Bridges' mom is part of, does some stuff, I think, for the front office. And so everybody was pretty much expecting Bridges to be the pick. And then somehow the Sixers were going to try to get another pick right behind that and then take Smith with that, but that didn't work out. And then it turns out that, you know, really they wanted Smith all along, it seems.
Yeah, so definitely a really interesting situation. You obviously feel for the family in that. The Sixers also had another first-round pick, Landry Schmidt at 26 overall. What were your thoughts on him?
For Schmidt, going to Wichita State, playing in a fast-paced offense, he's obviously a great shooter, really improved. He shot 30% his freshman year, but didn't play a lot, and then got that up to 41%, by the time he was able to come out a little early. Excels kind of scoring off the move. Decent defender, but no rookie is really an all-out, lights-out defender, so I don't really expect much on that side of the ball. But I like what I saw last preseason game, coming in, energy guy, knocking down threes, and that's something that they kind of need, because I think with Shamed, he can play both point guard, shooting guard, and maybe even a touch of small forward if he really had to. And right now with, the backup minutes, we'll talk about, with the starting lineup, but Fultz being the starter at the two guard spot, that kind of gives an opening at the backup point guard spot, and then a little bit of a role if J.J. Redick moves up with the injury of Wilson Chandler, if he kind of slides into a small ball, small forward role at for a few minutes a game, maybe that can open up, 5 or 6 minutes of Schmidt playing the two guard and knocking down some threes if he can beat out a guy like Furkan Korkmaz who plays small forward. It's just going to be kind of a mix and match for Brett Brown kind of coming off the bench. But Schmidt, I'm high on out of all of the rookies just because of his potential to shoot the ball.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I see just by looking at the numbers, the fact that every year in college he got better. As you mentioned, the shooting percentages got better. The points per game got better. The assists got better. So there is a possibility for him to secure, like you mentioned, that backup point guard role. Obviously, anything that gets Jared Bayless less minutes too would be ideal. So we just have to see if he can secure a role.
Now, looking at the second-round picks, they had two more picks, so four rookies coming in. Jonathan Bolden, Shake Milton. What do you like about these guys?
Well, I'll start with Milton. He's 6'6", combo guard out of SMU. Again, just like Schmidt, he's a good scorer off the dribble, can really shoot the ball. Looks to kind of get to the free-throw line, and he's a good knockdown free-throw shooter. What I want to see from him is, even though he's tall at 6'6", I want to see him get better as a playmaker running the point guard spot, because I think that's probably where he's going to slot in more so than the two guard spot, because he is a streaky shooter. The other thing is he's very unselfish. So there's a lot of times that he doesn't even look for his own offense. which is kind of what TJ McConnell already does. So I think that's why the Sixers looked at Shake Milton to develop in the G League this year as the two-way guy, get, you know, the 45 days with the Sixers, get, you know, some experience there to kind of be around the team and look to make the roster next season. With Jonah Bolden, it's interesting because he had to go overseas last season because there wasn't really a role for him. Not, you know, a great shooter by any means, but, you know, he can shoot it from deep if he has to. But I'd look more for those athletic buckets coming off of rebounds and putbacks and things like that. Good playmaker, not a bad rebounder, but very gifted as an athlete. So he'll be able to run the floor, get, you know, easy buckets, and then also, you know, be able to play multiple positions, the power forward and a little bit of small ball center, and athletic enough to block shots as well. So I think that he'll play more so in the G League for most of the season, because with Amir Johnson and Muscala there, unless there's a, you know, a major injury, I just don't see him getting a ton of floor time. And plus the inexperience and rushed showed in the summer league. So we'll see if that, you know, kind of turns around and he has a good rest of the preseason and going into the season, maybe he can snag some minutes.
I'm just going to agree with what Pete said. I don't know a ton about him.
I know Shade, you know, some people had like a first round grade on him, so getting him at this spot was very good. But moving on to the trades, they picked up Wilson Chandler and Mike Muscala. What do you like about these two? Obviously some veterans to add to this team.
Well, with Muscala, he has shown the ability. Obviously, everybody that watched the last preseason game, he likes to shoot the three. Very good in the corners shooting the three. Considering he was a, you know, back to the basket post player at Bucknell, kind of turned all the way around 360 to now being that shooting, you know, front face center, you know, very, very, you know, good player in a system, did well in Atlanta. And now with Philly, I think he's going to be able to play that stretch four role more than the center role, because I think Amir Johnson kind of fits that center role. He can start if Embiid sits out, but Muscala can stretch the floor, get you some rebounds. Not a great defender, but, you know, I don't think that, you know, the Sixers kind of picked him up for that. I think they picked him more up for the ability to be that stretch shooter. And then Wilson Chandler is a guy that kind of frustrates me because, you know, he could really be a guy that could be that bench scorer. You know, he is 30, he is a vet, you know, but he could give you buckets in a hurry, but he cannot stay healthy. Yeah. It's either his knees, his hip, his, you know, all kind of, you name it, it's injuries. Hamstrings twice. He's, you know, most recently he's out because of a hamstring injury. He was out for a number of games. It was 2013 or 12-13 that he was out, missed a ton of games because of it. And I just feel like he was kind of that guy that, you know, could fill it up versatilely off the bench. And now we're maybe not going to have him fully healthy if he even can start this season. So that kind of gives a hole in the rotation. And Elton Brand said it best, because he came right out, you know, once he was hired as the full-time GM and said, we still need one piece. Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid will disagree, but we need another piece in order to get to the finals in the Eastern Conference. And he's right. I mean, if you look at the bench, now that J.J. Redick's on there, that's your de facto scorer, but he's somebody that doesn't necessarily, you know, he's more of a three-point shooter, can kind of get off the dribble a little bit, but he's not going to take it to the hole a bunch. So if you take away that mid-range or three-point kind of game, that's where Wilson Chandler could have or still can. I don't know that I can fully in my head count on him because of the injuries, but that's where he could have picked up the mid-range, you know, kind of role and really gave you 10 to 12 quick points.
Yeah, I like Muscala as a face-up four off the bench. I mean, he's not going to give you much anyways, just 20 minutes a game probably, maybe even less than that, depending on how the rotation plays out. And I agree with you on Wilson Chandler. I mean, when they first traded for him, I was pretty happy about it. And, of course, you know, he gets hurt with the hamstring. He's out for 2 to 3 weeks now. You know, whether or not he gets back healthy and how healthy he'll be, the hamstring injury is always kind of tricky. But he's a guy who they could definitely use on impact. I mean, he can play the two, the three, the four, so you like the versatility of him. He can still score decently. And as you mentioned, you know, with him not on the bench unit to start, honestly, J.J. Redick's a good shooter, but, you know, that bench unit is just not great. And as you mentioned, Elton Brand saying, this team definitely needs, you know, one more piece. And they probably need a better role player as well, someone who can kind of be that six-man spark plug.
Yeah, well, let's hope Wilson Chandler can stay healthy and maybe he'll have a positive impact. Free agent signing-wise, Pete, anybody stick out to you? I know it's a lot of guys that aren't necessarily big NBA players. Anybody you think going to make the team or have an impact on the team?
Now, there's a guy that they signed for camp. I don't think that he's going to make the team, but Emeka Okafor, you know, came in, you know, off of a good season, a return season last year. With the Pelicans, he's somebody that I could kind of see taking that Elton Brand role where he obviously probably not going to make the team, but he would retire and then help the team on the coaching staff. And his vast knowledge defensively, grabbing rebounds can really help guys like Jonah Bolden, could help Dario Saric with positioning and things like that. So I think that just based off of that, that's a key guy that, you know, I would look for more on the coaching staff side of things than necessarily the playing side.
Anybody from you, Corey?
Yeah, I mean, Okafor is the one guy that sticks out because of how he finished New Orleans last year. I know Preston Ellis and the guys we have for the Bird Rights, they were really high on him too, and he played some valuable minutes in those 26 games. But I agree. I don't know if he actually makes it on the roster to start this season. But I think he'd be just a good veteran presence to have and, you know, a good second to third string center if they really needed him.
Yeah. I think, you know, culture can't be underrated in the NBA. I think a lot of people think it doesn't matter, but I think having, you know, solid vets for the locker room always help out. But departure-wise, Rashawn Holmes is gone, Justin Anderson, Timothy Lou Cabarrot, Marco Bellinelli, Yersin Liasova. Out of these guys, who do you wish they kept?
For me, Bellinelli, just because of the extra shooter, you know, veteran presence that could play shooting guard and small forward. And I think now with the injury to Wilson Chandler, they can really use it, even though it'd kind of be repetitive having, you know, Redick and Bellinelli off the bench. That, I mean, you can never have too much shooting off the bench. And, you know, the other guys, Cabarrot, just he kind of hit his ceiling, I think, with the Sixers. Rashawn Holmes, the same. Like, I don't think they were going to get any better in the roles that they were already in. And, you know, Ersan, you know, Ilyasova, we knew he was going to kind of go somewhere else. What kind of bummed me is they had Bielitsa, and then all of a sudden he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to retire, you know, from the NBA, and I'm going to go overseas again. And then next thing you know, here comes Sacramento and Vlade Divac, and it's like, oh, no, never mind. I'm going there. And that just kind of irked me. So I hope whenever the Sixers play Sacramento, they give them everything that, you know, they got and really put it on Bielitsa, because that was just annoying, because it's like, okay, he fills a role off the bench. He would be perfect as a backup power forward, being able to stretch the floor, and then all of a sudden he just didn't want to be here.
Yeah, that was a cheesy move. I definitely don't like, I hate when players do that type of thing, especially because it kind of screws with Sixers in the sense where, you know, they think that they're going to have this guy, so they stop maybe looking at free agents for that position. There wasn't a lot of guys left at the time anyways, but still, it kind of puts them in a bad position. But Corey, who do you think the Sixers should have kept if they had the opportunity?
I mean, definitely just for the fact that I think offense off the bench is crucial. So, you know, even if it was Bellinelli, Ilyasova, one of those two guys who can be that kind of another weapon off the bench. And as you mentioned with Bielitsa, I mean, it's not even just that he decided not to sign with the Sixers. It's the fact that he chose the Kings. I'm like, all places? It was like, that's where you really want to go. You could have been, you know, possibly in the Eastern Conference Finals, maybe in the finals if this team hits, like, you know, like the ceiling, and you decide to go to a team that's not even going to finish near the eighth seed in the West. So, yeah, I hope they give him everything they can. But for me, it probably would have been Bellinelli.
A nice Joel Embiid poster. Maybe I'll settle that down for Sixer fans. But prediction for opening night starting five?
Well, I think that Brett Brown's going to really stick to the lineup that he's running in the preseason. So you've got Ben Simmons at point guard, Markelle Fultz starting at the two guard, Robert Covington at the three, Dario Saric at the four, and Joel Embiid at the five. Now, obviously, the two guard spot can be fluent if Fultz all of a sudden starts struggling. The rest of preseason, they could always move Redick back into the starting lineup. And that's something that I've kind of had to adjust to, because I felt like Redick starting, you know, obviously the same as when he was with the Clippers, he gets going early, hit shots from the outside, that gets open looks in the inside for Joel Embiid in post-up opportunities. And then Fultz can also drive as well. So I was like, okay, how's this thing with Fultz going to work? But having that secondary ball handler in Fultz, I think that takes pressure off of Ben Simmons to always bring up the ball. He's able to kind of ISO himself once he gets, you know, off a dribble handoff and can get in the lane there. So I don't know. It's just going to have to be something that Fultz stays aggressive with, keeps looking for a shot. If he comes into the game, you know, say we're 10 games into the season and he's, you know, averaging 4 to 6 shot attempts a game, then it's going to be time to bring JJ back. But if he's ultra aggressive and looks like the player that, you know, had a triple double at the end of last season, then I think it's something that can last and could help JJ in longevity as far as his career, because he's in his 12th season in the NBA. And now that he, you know, is coming off the bench, he can kind of save his legs and really help for the playoffs. So I'm kind of hopeful that that lineup, you know, sticks the same.
Yeah, it's the same lineup for me as well. You can copy and paste it.
Yeah, it's definitely – I think the J.J. Redick and the Fultz thing is really interesting, because obviously you're getting a lot more spacing with J.J., but I like the point about the bench and, you know, he'll kind of help his career stay around a little bit longer. Like you said, I could see that swapping. That's like the one I'm unsure about, but everything else I'm pretty much is set in stone. Breakout starter for you guys.
For me, it's going to be Dario Saric. I think he takes a leap again this season. We know that he – can shoot the three and can play down low. I think this season you're going to see him kind of taking guys off the dribble, being more aggressive, getting to the free throw line. And I think that's really going to kind of open up the ability for him to kind of mix it up where he can drive and he can also spot up as well. And now with Markelle Fultz being able to drive in and kind of be that secondary ball handler, he has a guy to kick it out to and create plays. So for me, I was going to go with Fultz, but I wanted to kind of change it up and go with Saric, because I really do think he is going to make that leap.
Definitely one of the underrated guys in the NBA too, I think. But Corey, yep. Who you got?
I got Markelle Fultz. I'm doubling down. He was supposed to be Rookie of the Year last year for me, so I'm doubling down. I'm expecting what we saw in Game 82, the triple-double by the youngest player ever in NBA history. I'm expecting him to be healthy. I'm expecting that three-point shot to be a little bit more consistent. I'm expecting him to be what we expected going into last season. A guy who, he may not be the primary ball handler, it's going to be Ben Simmons, of course, but it's another guy who, as you mentioned, he can, you know, drive and dish out. And I don't know. I like the tempo they can run with Fultz in there as well.
Yeah, I like the Fultz. I like the Saric pick. I'm going to go with Ben Simmons, similar to Corey. I'm doubling down. I think he's going to make another jump this year. He's going to adapt his game, maybe add a little bit of shooting. If not, he'll kind of attack the game in a different way, kind of understanding defense is going to play him a little bit more. Breakout bench player for you guys.
I'm going to say I hope it's Furkan Korkmaz. Now that the injury has occurred to Wilson Chandler, I'm hoping he can kind of slide up into that small forward role, shoot the ball well enough that he can, you know, get consistent rotation minutes. I think it's going to be either between him or Landry Shamet off the bench as that shooter to go with J.J. Redick. And I think that, you know, Furkan Korkmaz with the experience can gain the role easier. He's just going to have to be there defensively. That's somewhere he struggled really bad last season, even in the G League. Had a nice summer league shooting the ball, kind of filled it up, you know, very early on, and then got inconsistent as the summer league went on. So I just hope that, you know, his conditioning is up to par. And then, of course, his shooting is there, but I think that he has a real chance now with Wilson Chandler kind of with an injury to slide in there, get some early rotation minutes and maybe stick.
And he's a guy who had a really nice summer league too, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes. Yeah, he I think he had the 40-point game.
Yeah, he had a 40-point explosion, I think the first game or the second game of the preseason of the summer league.
What about you, Corey?
I mean, Korkma was the guy I was looking at as well. Simply because he was the one guy who caught my eye with the 40-point outburst. You know, obviously the defensive issues are there. And as you mentioned, Pete, he kind of got more inconsistent scoring-wise as Summer League kind of drew on. But they're going to need offense from the second unit. And if Korkma can play solid defense enough to stay on the floor, he can be an offensive threat. And I think somebody on that unit's got to score points. I think it could be Korkma's.
Yeah, I like that pick as well. I'm just going to be a little bit different. I think Mike Muscala will have a nice season. I think, you know, he was already solid in Atlanta, but more people will talk about him because he'll be on a playoff team having a real impact. Now, talking about the season overall, best case scenario for the Sixers?
Best case for me is kind of, well, obviously first place in the East. I think for me, honestly, in my head, I would be shocked if it happens, but obviously that's best case scenario. I could see, you know, anywhere around the 55 to, you know, 57, you know, win mark if, you know, all goes well. You know, that's just kind of where I'm at, best case scenario.
Yeah, I think best case scenario for me would be 57 wins. They're a two seed. I don't think they're going to be the one seed. I think they're a two or a three seed with 57 wins as best case scenario.
Yeah, I got 56 wins, best case scenario. I think they end up in the Eastern Conference Finals and probably lose in six or seven. You guys think in a best case scenario they can get to the finals?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What about worst case scenario?
That's where I kind of struggled because I'm more realistic. So I look at a worst case scenario, you fall behind the Indianas, you fall behind Milwaukee, you know, and you're in that sixth seed, and you could be right around where kind of expectations were last season to where it's, you know, the 42, 43 wins. And that's if like an injury happens to Joel or, you know, Ben Simmons, something like that. And then, you know, the other person that's healthy has to take on more and the team just kind of struggles all the way around. We'll see. I hope it obviously doesn't happen though.
Yeah. Worst case scenario for me would be, 46 wins, 45 wins. They're still a playoff team. Somebody gets hurt, but they're just not. You know, maybe the bench unit becomes more of an issue than we're expecting, and the starters just kind of can't make up for the deficiencies from that second unit. They kind of just – they're competitive, but they're not good enough to really make a deep playoff run.
Yeah, you guys are pretty spot on. I think like 47, 48, maybe, you know, Ben Simmons and Markelle Fultz shooting really have a bad impact on the team and they land one of these middle seeds and they deal with some injuries. But actual prediction for the season, what do you guys got?
For me, I have them third in the East. I have them at 53 wins. I just think that Boston obviously is number one. I think they're just going to be firing on all cylinders. And then Toronto is going to be number two. Just the way that Nick Nurse is able to build that offense around, I think adding Kawhi Leonard and just kind of switching that lineup around is just going to be a little bit too much for the Sixers to overcome to get to that second seed. But I think, you know, kind of being that third seed, you know, is really going to put them in a tough spot for playing Boston earlier than what I would like. But, you know, I feel like that's the most realistic because – you know, now the teams kind of can scout Ben Simmons for a whole, you know, have scouted him a whole season, really know what he likes to do. I think that they can kind of hone in on that. So it's really going to force him to shoot the ball more. And then I'm not 100% sold on Joel Embiid still making smart reads at the end of games. So, you know, right about the third seed is where I have him.
Yeah, for me, the Vegas over-under for the Sixers this year is 54.5 wins. I'm going with the over. I'm going to say they get 55 wins. I'm half over. And I think you're right. I think they're a three seed probably. I'm expecting them to make it to at least the second round. I wouldn't be surprised if this is a team in the Eastern Conference Finals because obviously somebody's going to have to match up with the Raptors and the Celtics in the second round. And I think this team will be competitive, and I think they'll be one of the tougher teams in the East.
Yeah, I actually have the same exact win total as Pete at 53 in a third seed. And like you guys said, most likely in the second round, they have to match up with Boston, but they could get to the Eastern Conference Finals. What do you think is a more favorable matchup for them? Would they rather see Boston or Toronto?
For me, it's Toronto. I would take Toronto 10 times out of 10 over having to play Boston, you know, earlier than the Eastern Conference Finals. So hopefully, you know, my prediction is wrong. Hopefully they can slot up to the second seed instead of the third seed, but we'll see.
Yeah, for me, it'd be Toronto as well, because I think, at least in, especially in that matchup, Joel Embiid feasts on the lack of defensive centers in Toronto, whereas even though Horford's kind of undersized, just there's more issues facing Boston. It's a tougher team, I think, than the Raptors right now.
Yeah, and then you got to worry about Brad Stevens, which is always fun. But moving on to the truth, what emoji represents the Sixers for you guys?
For me, it's excitement, just because now we've seen what the Sixers are capable of. Can they, pull it out again and take that next leap and actually make, the NBA Finals? We'll see. It's going to be tough, but I think that, really it's going to define, this season will define Markelle Fultz overall, going forward. So a lot of pressure was on his shoulders last season. It's going to be even more this season. But it's make or break for him, in my opinion, because if he has another bad year, it's going to be frustrating to fans to see Jason Tatum succeed and Fultz falter. But it's also the year that Ben Simmons is going to have to show some signs of a jump shot as well, moving forward, just to give the Sixers some hope, moving forward, that he's just not kind of a, driver and finisher. He can do a little bit more.
Yeah, for me, the emoji is the thinking face, the scratching emoji of the chin, because I think this team has a lot of potential, and I'm just, similar to UP with the, does Ben Simmons develop a jump shot? How does Markelle Fultz look? There's still a lot of question marks on this team, although I think they're going to be very good out east, and they're going to be one of the better teams. There's still just a lot of question marks for whether or not they can get over that hump, and they can actually, officially arrive. As we know, last year they were one of the younger teams, and we saw that in the playoffs. And, with a year of playoff experience for Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, how does that translate to year two? So for me, it's the thinking face.
Yeah, for me, I'm going to go with something fun. The crying laughter emoji for Joel Embiid's Twitter game and all his social media stuff. I think that's really funny in his press conferences and whatnot. But league pass-wise, 1 through 10, where do they sit?
I have them at a 9. They're just exciting to watch. Everybody's going to want to see what happens this year with Markelle Fultz. And that's going to be the big story. But for me, I'm going to, watch them either way, even if they are on any channel, just because I'm obviously a Sixers guy. But I think the excitement's there, the push forward for Simmons and Embiid and the development of Fultz. So.
For me, I'm going to go with a 9.2. I'm excited to see Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. Those guys are must-watch TV. And, of course, I'm hoping Fultz comes in and, comes through on my double down on him this year.
I'm going with 9 as well, like Pete. I think, there's a lot of excitement and a lot of storylines as well. Now, what TV show would you watch over the Sixers with a gun to your head?
Oh, man.
Or I'll make it easy for you, Pete. Maybe a Eagles playoff game?
Oh yeah, I would watch an Eagles playoff game. As far as TV, I mean, I'm mostly a basketball, watcher. I kind of flip around, watch all different teams. So I'm always scouting somebody or doing some kind of something with analytics and putting something together. So I don't watch a lot of TV shows. For me, the only real TV shows I get into, I like the Chicago series, whether it's the Chicago Fire, PD, or Med. One Chicago is a call it. I was curious to kind of check out the Magnum PI reboot, and that kind of sucked. So that was a little disappointing.
For saving our time.
Yeah, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. I just don't see Jay Hernandez in the role of Tom Selleck. It just doesn't fit for me. So it just kind of ruined the whole thing for me, but so be it.
What do you got, Corey?
For me, the show is It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Yeah, it's funny, right? I had this lined up for this exact podcast. It's 30-minute episodes. They're funny skits. It's all like improv. I don't think any of it's scripted. It's just really funny. It's a good time. You guys haven't seen it before.
Yeah, definitely a funny show. I'm going to go with Spartacus. I don't know if you guys ever caught that. Obviously, back in the day type of show, with gladiators and whatnot. It's pretty exciting. It's over now. But any last thoughts you guys want to get in the Sixers? Anything you think we didn't cover?
Just some last thoughts. I think that if, you know, fans are just kind of casual NBA fans, I think this is the year to really check the Sixers out, because I think Fultz is determined to really make a mark after obviously having the injuries and the mental lapses last season. And I think if he's at 100% mentally and physically, it's really going to help the Sixers, because it gives them another potential scorer that can take the pressure off of Joel and Ben Simmons. And watching those two, and Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, go to work on the offensive end is just really something special to watch. So don't jump on the bandwagon whenever they make the NBA Finals and you know, really kind of push forward. Don't jump on the bandwagon then. Go ahead and jump on the bandwagon now and you know, push forward, you know, as a trust the process, as they say.
What about you, Corey? Last thoughts?
Yeah, it's another podcast topic in depth, but I think Joel Embiid finishes in the top five for MVP, and I think Markelle Fultz finishes top five for most improved player.
Ooh, coming with some award takes.
As always,
a pleasure to have you on, Pete. Second time in the NBA Outlet Series. Tell everyone where they can find you on Twitter and find your work.
You can find me on Twitter at Pete Toll. So it's PETETOALNBA. Always, you know, looking to talk basketball. I actually co-host a podcast with Keith Smith and our producer, Con Arell. We have the NBA Front Office Show. We're a little bit different than the normal podcast that many would listen to, in the fact that we deep dive into individual players, kind of what their roles are on the team, kind of how they fit, predictions going forward, things like that. We go all the way down to the two-way players and the training camp guys. So that's what kind of sets us apart from other podcasts, because life got in the way. I have a almost close to two-year-old, and Keith has his daughter, and Con was kind of doing some traveling for work. Our schedules kind of never really kind of synced back up to finish our training camp kind of outlooks or summer off-season reviews and training camp previews. So we're going to really dive back in once the season starts and really look at teams and kind of how they're performing and individual players and look at moving forward kind of what they can do for each team. So if you're interested, go on Twitter. It's at Front Office Show. And on iTunes, you can look up NBA Front Office Show, and it'll say with Keith Smith, and there you go.
Yeah, really great show. Awesome. And like Pete said, they really go in depth, and they'll cover guys that you maybe don't even know about. You know, they'll go all the way down to the G League, two-way players, really a lot of good information on there. But as always, thank everybody for listening. Corey, always a pleasure talking hoops. Check us out on iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube.
Peace out, knuckleheads.